Welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu. Brand new host, Noemi Rojas, joins us this afternoon. Noemi, we have distinguished guests in the studio. Would you please do the honors?
I am pleased to present to you Dr. Hoy Ho of Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, Paul L. Foster School of Medicine, and Claudia Cortez. She is also with the Texas Tech Paul Foster School of Medicine. Welcome to both of you.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Dr. Ho, you are the Associate Academic Dean for Faculty Affairs and Development.
Yes.
What does that mean?
It sounds important, but it's not. It's actually, since we have close to 300 full-time faculty, and almost all of them will need a lot of attention, a lot of care, because it's important to recruit the right people for the right position. And it's also more important to actually provide opportunity for them to develop their career and stay with us.
You are also the director of the Advanced Teaching and Assessment in Clinical Simulation.
Yes.
And we're going to, for the sake of the interview, I'm just going to say Sim Center. Simulation.
That is what would be fine.
Simulation Center. What is a simulation center?
A simulation center, actually, that term has been new, just only around for the last 10, 15 years. When I was in medical training back in the late 60s, there's no such a thing as simulation and medical simulation. Although the term of simulation has been circulating in the military, and that is the simulation of for the pilot of the Air Force or of the Navy. But medical simulation has only been in place late in the 70s and the 80s, and probably become more developed in the late 90s.
Right.
When you're dealing with simulation, are we talking about infectious diseases? Are we talking about injury? What are we talking about in those terms?
That's a very good question. As you all know, one major problem that we have to deal with in the medical practice is the medical errors. And that is actually since 1999, the Institute of Medicine, it's the first time they reported that the medical errors every single year had cost 100,000 lives of the American in the hospital alone. And that figure of 100,000 death a year due to medical error has not been changed significantly in the last 12 years. So there are a number of things that we have to do to minimize, to reduce the medical errors. And medical simulation is one of those approach that we hope that it will be able to help us to reduce the medical errors. So it is applicable to almost all specialty, and not necessarily just only for surgery or medicine or obstetric gynecology.
The reason why I wanted to interview you was because your Sim Center here in El Paso, Texas, is the only one in Texas that is accredited by, could you tell me what agency accredits the Sim
Center? Sure, we'll be happy to. In Texas, we have 8 medical center or 8 medical school. Each medical school may have one or more than one simulation center. Beside that, we also have several school of nursing in Texas and school of allied health that provide all the mid-level professional, such as respiratory therapists also. And each of those schools also have the simulation because it is curriculum driven. However, just like in any business of education also, we have to have a standard. And because of that, they have an organization called Society of Simulation in Healthcare. The abbreviation is SSH. And that body will review, do on-site review, to see how the simulation center operate in teaching and assessment, whether that simulation center has the capability or has enough manpower equipment to function in those areas. And they're the one that after extensive review will decide whether that simulation center can be accredited.
And so the accreditation that you have here at the Paul Foster School of Medicine Simulation Center, it's national accreditation, or it's the only one in Texas with this national accreditation.
Yes, that is correct. And it's actually up to now in 2013, in the United States, there's a total of 31 simulation centers that received that accreditation. And we are the only one in the state of Texas.
That's amazing. What do you have? What sort of benchmarks or what do you have to achieve in order to get that status of accreditation?
There are a number of things that we have to fulfill. Number one, for example, the teaching. We have to have the curriculum. We have to develop the course. We have to have criteria for assessment of the learner, as well as qualification of the trainer, as well as all of the support facility. So they actually go into detail and during the process to prepare for accreditation. The whole document is actually several hundred pages long for us to complete before they do the review.
And do you have to have certain technology, that they require before you can be accredited?
Yeah, that is a very, very good question. For technology in medical education as well, technology in medical simulation, we have to have those available. The reason is the learner at all, they have different level from the beginner to the expert, that we have to have capability, equipment, as well as trainer to train them. Based on the principle that the very low level or the beginner, we have to have simulation equipment that is simple to operate. And then for the expert, we have to have the more realistic, the more sophisticated equipment. And fortunately, we do have the whole host of many equipment.
What's one of the more sophisticated pieces of equipment that you have?
We call them that is either virtual reality. Virtual reality, it could be equipment. Let's say, if you have seen some of the high-end game or high-end flight simulator, the person is just like in the environment. They call immersive virtual reality. So it's just like that individual is right in the cockpit of the airplane. In medical simulation, the operator or the trainee, it will be in a position, it's so real, so that individual feel he or she is like in the position in the operating room or in performing the real procedure.
So I'm envisioning things like that Da Vinci robot thing.
Yes.
Do you guys simulate that with that? Do you have that robot?
We do have that robot, Da Vinci, so that the learner can get trained in the simulation environment so that he or she can do a better job when they are in the real patient care.
So you're training medical students as well as residents?
As well as faculty, too.
As well as just like the hospitalist who works at a private hospital?
Yes. So we cover the range of student, resident, fellows, faculty, or those people that need to, come in again to practice certain skills that they haven't done in a very long time, and they have new equipment to practice on to cover that technique.
So then the physicians must be coming from around the region then?
We haven't had people from the region, but we have had our local physicians come back in and practice the same techniques that they may not have covered in a long time and get the practice again so that they're not practicing out on the patients, so they're practicing on the equipment. And they're treating the equipment just like they would a regular patient.
People would be asking, our listeners would ask about EMTs, emergency medical technicians. The training would have to go from there up because of the triage, no?
Yes.
With EMTs and the technology, what does a beginner get in order to first, you know, just get comfortable with stuff before you really get knee-deep into all of the new technology?
For the EMT also, the curriculum for training those we call paramedical one is will be first aid first, such as those individual are the first response to the call that is somebody was involved in an accident far away from the hospital. So how can they provide and render the important, could be life-saving procedure on that? So the at this moment, the Department of Emergency Medicine at the Texas Tech University Health Science Center for Foster School of Medicine, they do provide regularly training for EMT, and that is the second simulation center at this moment is located on Yandale.
I bring it up because most times people will say, how is this person, how is a first responder going to know what's gone on with this patient before they go to the hospital for the full evaluation? And that answers the question perfectly. As long as they go to training and get up to speed, that's wonderful. Now, does this happen on a regular basis, or do you guys actually go out into the community, find these first responders and say, hey, listen, we need to get you up to speed?
At this moment, the Department of Emergency Medicine has been very active in training those first responder, and those include, it could be police officer, could be firefighter, and also the EMT. And they do have the curriculum very well describe what skill, what kind of necessary procedure that they have to learn, such as how to establish the airway, how to start an IV line, you know, quickly, effectively.
So, and I got to participate in one of those trainings along with police officers from El Paso. So they did 3 days, and we worked on CPR, and we had background information, and we had the mannequins. So we had to learn about, you know, care of the mannequins and to treat them like we would a patient. And we got on our knees and did the CPR along with the police officer. So we got similar training. And so that's what they have to do. They have to pretend that that's the person that they're saving and then go through the process.
Those mannequins are much more sophisticated now as they were when I was a kid, when they would bring them to high school and say, well, this is what we do for CPR. They're much more.
Well, they talk, don't they? Or
they talk, they blink, their pupils dilate. They're quite, they just don't get up and walk by themselves.
Yes, they they can react, they can respond. And let's put it this way, all of the sick organ, such as we have the lung, the heart, and also, they all will operate on the mannequin just like on a normal human body. And because of that, we can use the simulator, that high-end simulator, to teach about physiology, about how a normal person, how a normal patient, that those organs will function, and how about in the disease condition, how it will change. So such as we can program for the blood pressure to go from the normal to the very high or to the very low. We can make the heart rate to race, you know, it's the 140, 150, or we can stop the heart. And so that is, those are wonderful teaching and training equipment.
I have been to your simulation center probably a couple of years ago. Has it changed since I was there?
We're very fortunate to have the support of the medical school and providing more resources to obtain better equipment, newer equipment, to provide better teaching to our student, resident, fellow, and faculty. Yes, so it changed almost every year.
So you'll have to come back and visit.
That's right.
So what is the operating budget of the Sim Center?
The operating budget of the simulation center, let's put it this way, the salary for all of the personnel that belong to the Sim Center probably account the highest, you know, portion of the operating budget. And then maintenance of those equipment is also account for a significant part. And because of that, the student, all students from year one to year two, they part of their tuition, they have the so-called simulation fee that all students every year, they have to pay $500 for a simulation fee.
We were talking about the use of mannequins, but what I find really interesting, and I know that listeners will also, you actually hire people to act like a patient. How many of those actors do you have right now?
So we call them standardized patients, and we have up to 50 standardized patients. And they come from varying backgrounds, and they're all wonderful people. So I know that they're hearing us today. They all applied just like any other employee of the Texas Tech system. They're part-time employees, so they have to go through the application process. And they come in and do a sit-down interview, and they do a simulation. So we'll sit down and, you know, pretend that we're learning a script. We'll sit down, go through it together, and we see what their interests are in coming to work with the students. And after that process, then we determine whether they're a good fit for our program to assess our students and faculty. And so we have a wide variety. So we have a lot of different SPs for that.
So anybody can go to your job board, and what are they looking for? What is the title of that job position?
So it's standardized patient, and you would go to the TTUHSC website under human resources. When there is a posting, it'll show under standardized patient. Currently, we're not actively hiring because we have just as many standardized patients that we need for learning cases. But when we do, we get a good turnout of applicants, so we can really be choosy.
What's the qualifications? Do you have to be an actor, quote unquote?
No, you don't have to be an actor. As a matter of fact, we have in our program, we have some retired pilot. We have retired nurses, retired teachers. We have college students. We have people that come in and attend UTEP that they do this on their part-time basis. We have some people that have their own business, and they just want to help out and improve medical care for people in the community. So, you know, they want to be a part of making medicine better. And so we take a look at them. We even have standardized patients that are parents that stay at home, and they even bring in their children. So we have a session where they bring in their children, and they get to interact with the students, their second year, and that gets to be exciting too. So we have a wide variety. So they're not just acting ability.
It pays well.
Yes, we pay $20 an hour, and so that's a lot better than minimum. So,
and these are part-time positions?
And these are part-time, as requested, depending on the cases that we're trying to help the students with, that the faculty turn into us. We look for that. We have a pool of people, and then I'll pick from that pool.
Naturally, to make that more realistic, Claudia is an expert in making things look real. So all of the patient come in, for example, a scenario require the patient to have some particular skin lesion. It could be a fracture of the leg or of the arm or some of the cancer, also of the skin. So how can we do it on that? So those are the normal people. So she have to exercise her magic. And that is what we call moulage.
And so that lots is of makeup.
To do wow. all the makeup. So make it so real, so yucky.
Oh, nice.
Well, Claudia, what is your education? You have a bachelor's?
Well, I have a master's degree. I come from working with the Health Sciences Center for many years, almost 15 years soon. And but I'm a recreational therapist. I started off as a recreational therapist. Now I'm a rehabilitation counselor. And you figure, how does that fit in? But I'm used to working with patients and clients in different capacities in hospital settings and contract work. So, and that's important. Students need to learn how to treat their patient. And they can't ignore things when a patient comes in with a black eye and they're just wondering, you know, oh, my blood pressure is high. Why did you get that? You know, can you tell me what's going on with your eye? And so they have to ask these questions to find out what's really going on with the patient's life. And I don't think we covered it, but we sometimes mix in the mannequins with the standardized patients. And by mixing, I'm saying that it could be that they're working on the mannequin and the standardized patient is the family member of that person. So all of a sudden they have to break bad news, you know, and who do they break it to? I mean, it's not going to be realistic breaking it to the mannequin. So they may have to go and talk to the standardized patient and break the news. And, I mean, this standardized patient is crying and, you know, has feelings and has emotions. So it's a hard thing to do, but they need to practice these skills before they go and do it into the community. So I just supply that extra feeling, the moulage, the makeup, to make it more realistic for them.
My mom is an LVN, and so I hear her stories of, you know, patients and scenarios. And she'll say, you know, being a nurse is hard because a lot of the times you'll get patients who are ungrateful, they're rude, they're just not nice. And so do your standardized patients, give them instructions to
yes.
be difficult?
We have difficult patients when they have to be difficult patients for purposes of the simulation. Sometimes, you know, they do get patients that don't want to hear that they were diagnosed with, you know, some disease. So they'll act appropriately and they'll have to still give the information to the patient like they would anyone else. And it's good practice for the students if they're angry and upset and crying and tears. I mean, it's things that they're going to come up to.
I take it there are a series of classroom activity before you get to the standardized patient to be able to break the news of things like that. There's a sociological model, there's a psychological model that you kind of have to standardize before you meet that patient for the first time and say, listen, I have to tell you something. You have to go through that whole process, right? How many hours do you think is devoted strictly for that bedside manner?
What would you say, Dr.?
It would be exactly like you mentioned. Communication skill is the part that we need to train and continue to train to all physicians at the very early stage and then throughout the whole of their career, the whole career mm-hmm. on that is because communication is so important. And please remember that many lawsuits is actually not because of the bad outcome. It is because of bad communication with the physician on that. So that is something that we particularly emphasize in simulation. So from year one to year four and then beyond, that means that going to internship, to residency, we continue to train our physician how to improve their communication skill, particularly in the area of delivering bad news also. So those are the things that we pay a lot of attention.
What did that mean?
Five minutes.
Okay.
So now we're at 4 minutes.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, like, what kinds of conditions do you present to the medical student? Is it flu or is it, you know, or I guess it's orthopedic. Is it psych? Do you present psych issues? I mean, what kind of things do you present?
It depends on our learners. So our medical years one and two have a curriculum in where they learn a specific scheme. And throughout, they're learning different things to kind of add to the scheme. And by the end of the week, they're applying it to a standardized patient. So they learn the basic sciences, they do the anatomy, physiology, and then they'll come in and apply that knowledge to a standardized patient. And so that's year one and two. When you start getting to years three and four, then you're doing the psych, internal medicine, pediatrics. So then they correlate with what they're rotating. So they're never it's never something new. It's always something that they have covered within the clinic that they want to reinforce that behavior, or they want to make sure that they understood what they had to do. And then they come in and they practice within the simulation center. So it's going to depend on the learner and the activity that they're going to be matched with.
Do you present the learner with like a situation where they have to make a judgment call to where it's not, you know, where the decision isn't clearly black and white, where you kind of have to make a judgment call? Or do you ever present that to your learners?
Yes, they're always learning that. And they have to sometimes, you know, they can't be the parental type, no, you have to stop eating that because it's not good for you. Well, that doesn't necessarily work with the patient. So you have to pretend that you're a team, that you're empathetic, that you're really listening to, you know, what's going on in their life, to try to convince them that that would be the better option for them. So they do these encounters when they do have their standardized patient encounters. So they do learn those things.
I was doing a little bit of research on sim mm-hmm. centers, and it was interesting to see that some people in the medical profession aren't totally convinced that simulation centers make a difference in medical outcomes. What would you have to say about, you know, or to someone who has, you know, a skeptical or isn't convinced that medical simulation works?
Sure. I think that if we have 100 physicians, we will have 100 different opinions. And the most important is to see, to go over some of the things that we consider as the standard in the past, whether it's right or wrong. One of that is see one, do one, and teach one. You probably heard about that one, right? And try to imagine that one of us one day become the patient. And there's a physician or any healthcare provider come in and about to perform a procedure. And that procedure probably can be life-saving, but that's at the same time can be very dangerous if not done properly. So if you are the family member, ask that provider, with all due respect, how many times, doctor, that you had done this procedure? So that provider look at you, scratch his or her head, say, you will be the first one.
I'd say no way.
All right. So just think about our scenario. As opposed that we have now medical trainees, a physician, a nurses also, that before performing the procedure had done probably not less than 20 procedure or 30 procedure to the level that will be considered is achieved the so-called competency, because that was the one that we did.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ho, and thank you, Ms. Cortez, for coming today and talking to our audience about your one and only Sim Center in Texas that has national accreditation and making all of El Paso proud of that. We wish you continued success.
Thank you
so much, Naomi. And thank you very much.
And we thank you for listening to El Paso Primetime.